What's for dinner?
Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds.
Oh, that was a kind of little technical mess up. Hey, everybody, welcome. What's for dinner?
Whee! Hello, everybody.
Where are we? We're in a car. Guess what? We're in a car doing a podcast.
Woo!
Yeah. You wouldn't call that a podcast. You might call that a
carcast.
A carcast. Or I was going to say a hot rodcast.
A podcast.
A podcast? Allison doesn't have a microphone, so I might be,
I might talk loud.
Yeah. Jewish woman never talks loud. But we're in Allison's car. We're driving back from an amazing week in Las Vegas, and we are also carpooling back with one of the other comedians on the show, and we're like, well, hell, you can be in the show. This podcast thing is portable now. Let's just do this. So he's kind enough to agree. He's here right now. The amazing, the incomparable, the legendary, the man, David Gee, is here, everybody.
Are we there yet?
We've got a ways to go, Mr. Gee.
Thank you, Flip. You know, this is just a real, real high-class affair here.
Oh.
You know, you can't hide money. Anyway, a word of, can I give you a word of advice?
Please.
Trim the toenails.
Aren't they terrible? You've been picking at
them. Oh,
I've
my
been
God.
Picking at them. I've just, I've had my foot up on the dash.
Toe jam football going on.
I'm sorry. Was that really gross? I'm sorry.
No, not at all. But I'm out of material.
But I think I like how you brought it up after we start recording. There was hours that you could have said, Flip with the toes.
But no.
I was actually waiting for that. I was waiting to open the podcast with that joke.
I think it was well worth the wait.
Do you believe these two?
They don't. They don't believe us. Not at all.
The chemistry is just so palpable. It's wonderful to see.
It we're like Burns and Allen, but without the talent.
Burns and Allen, I
did you ever meet Burns?
I was on it, actually flying on Southwest Airlines to Las Vegas, and he was on the plane.
What?
But I didn't meet him. And I always remember thinking, you know, this plane goes down. I was with another comedian. I said, this plane goes down. Nobody's ever going to remember we were on it. Because God is sitting in the second row.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah, David has, we've been spending a lot of the car ride just talking comedy, and he has worked and has many, many stories with some great comics. Matter of fact, the comic we work with in Vegas this week was Kevin Pollak. Amazing comic, amazing actor. You should know him. Few Good Men, Usual Suspects. And so, David, you started with Kevin in the Bay Area, right?
We did. And back when the earth was cooling. It was quite a while ago. But I'm older than he by a couple of years. And
so he's, what, 28?
Yeah. And I was kind of just starting out in the San Jose area, actually. And he was still in high school. And then I met him at a party because he did impressions. And we just do impressions in the kitchens at parties for the next couple of years. And then we started working together in clubs around town, usually together or opening up for, like, bands and stuff. But it's great. And it was wonderful to work with him. Wasn't he terrific?
He really was.
Oh, so
God.
Fun.
Like, it was just great.
That audience did not deserve him.
Well, it's like, you know, my dad was a minister, and he said, the one thing you can't do is stand in the pulpit and complain about the people who are in church, you know.
Exactly.
Complain to the people who are in church about people who don't go, because they're there. So, you know, I mean.
There are people that you're still performing for. They're still there to appreciate you.
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, the numbers should be much higher, and I put that on Harris.
You heard it right here.
There you go.
Well, hopefully by the next time we both do Harris, it'll be a completely different. Because the great thing about David Gee, and for those of you who know me, and you should because you're listening to this, you know I'm a fan of old school comedy. I love the history of it. I love the forefathers, the innovators of modern stand up comedy, which a lot of young comedians don't even know, which is sad. And David, again, not only has gotten to work with some legends, he also appreciates the affinity for the classics and the old school comedy.
Absolutely.
Like, who would you say would be your favorite old school comic?
My favorite old school.
Old school.
Boy, that's a tough one. In terms of comic, you know what I loved? I loved Alan King.
Oh, God.
Oh, he was great.
I really thought Alan King was funny.
He was.
Did you ever hear his bit Survived by His Wife?
No.
He talks about how women so blatantly outlive men. And he kind of puts a little thing on it like it's their fault they go early. And so he starts reading obituaries, and it's hilarious because every punchline ends with "survived by his wife," you know, and you start getting up in the late 70s, the early 80s, and then it ends like with this: the last surviving Civil War veteran, you know, survived by his wife. It was a great bit.
Oh, he was. I mean,
and I don't do it justice, of course, but he was.
He was the leader of the friars, or he was the call it, the king of the friars.
The abbot, I think, is what he was. Friars. Are you a friar?
No, I'm not, but I've you know, we discussed during the week some great moments there. I've done a lot of shows there and a couple of roasts.
Who'd you roast?
Jan Murray.
Wow.
And Buddy Hackett.
Wow.
You roasted Buddy?
Yeah, and he... He was very funny that night. It was just a different...
Only that night.
Yeah, it was... You know who else I roasted there? Tom Lasorda.
Tommy Lasorda.
And
wow.
This is a pretty funny story, I think, I hope. Anyway, I'm going to be the MC, and Tom Lasorda's out there with his wife, Joe, and he's sitting right center stage, and then all the great Dodgers of the 70s and 80s were there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bill Russell, Steve Garvey, Ron Say... Dusty Baker, and it was just looked like a great thing. And they don't, of course, know me. So I'm walking around, I'm kind of checking everybody out. And then I go behind the curtain, and Vin Scully did not show up. Vin Scully, the voice of the Dodgers for 65 years. And
he didn't show up?
He couldn't make it.
Oh, okay.
He had another engagement. So I'm in the back, and they give me a microphone.
Oh,
and they act like it's Vin Scully back there, and he doesn't know who is being wrote. And so I go, you hear, well, this looks like quite the affair. Hey, tell me, who are we paying tribute to? And the guy goes, Tom Lasorda. Tommy Lasorda? That fat fuck? Oh, no. Are you kidding me? I hate that son of a bitch.
Oh, my God, I love it.
And I'm looking out through the curtains, and thankfully, everybody's enjoying it.
Okay, good.
And it was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
Because it's so not Vin Scully.
No, what?
You know, I did a bit where if you look at Yasiel Puig and you're an opposing pitcher, you've got to be reminded of the words of Mata Hari, who said to her firing squad, she said, "Who do I have to fuck to get a blindfold around here?"
I think that's one of the great things about doing impressions, especially you, is like you take these personas, these personalities, and you put them in these weird or extreme circumstances that they'd never be in, like Vince Scully, you know, calling Tommy Lasorda fat fuck, or the Jimmy Stewart in the It's a Wonderful Life. With
yelling at Mr. Potter. Hey there, Mr. Potter, you warped. Frustrated, scum-lapping shitbag you, huh? Kiss my ass, you limp dick son of a bitch. Why?
Scum-lapping shitbag is going to be the name of this episode, by the way.
I like that. I think I might have copyrighted that. I don't know.
I'll give you a percentage. By the way, did you ever hear that roast? Somebody played it for me. It was only an audio tape of Don Rickles' roast.
At the Friars Club?
At the Friars, with Carson.
I might have seen it. I'm sure it was just incredible.
I didn't see it. This is before they were televising.
It had to be incredible.
But it was the audio of it. But this is all I remember from it. Johnny Carson comes out there and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, we're here to honor Don Rickles. Don Rickles, a fine man. And he just basically does about 40 seconds of just what a great guy Rickles is, and about just 40 seconds about how it's so wonderful that everybody's here to honor him. And then he tops it off by going, because as we all know, faggots need friends.
Oh, man.
and then just kills the room, yeah. And then starts talking about Don's act, and he goes, Don Rickles' act, which, by the way, is as subtle as an elephant's prick.
Oh, man.
And to just hear Carson say that was
exactly it,
beyond the moon.
Just, he was just terrific, Johnny Carson. You know, I was saying this earlier as a host, that, you know, I host a lot, and I do a lot of MC work, and he said something that I just live by: if they look good, I look good.
Yeah.
You know, he was just the perfect host, wasn't he? I mean, he was a great interviewer, but he just let people go.
Totally.
And I just missed that about him. He was just a master, that guy.
We're talking about Steve Martin's book, and pardon me, Steve Martin talks about when he was on The Tonight Show and just says pretty much that same thing, that Johnny, excuse me, just knew how to let you go, could be your straight man if you needed it, could jump in if you're dying, but will essentially just sit back and just enjoy you. And when he, and like you said, if you look good, or if they look good, I look good, he was making, like, Steve Martin look good by just laughing. Or that classic with Albert Brooks when he does...
Oh, with the hot potato.
With the hot pepper.
Yeah, where he does... It's a hot potato and he does curly.
Right.
Woo, 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 woo. I mean, Carson was busted.
Crying.
And I was, too. I remember that. And that was just hilarious. I mean, that guy is great.
Albert Brooks or Carson?
Albert Brooks and, of course, Johnny Carson. You know, you mentioned Steve Martin. He was kind of, in my high school junior college group, kind of our personal comedian. He wasn't really well known at this time, and we used to go up and see him at a place called the Boarding House in San Francisco. And we'd always go to the second show because after the first show, he comes out and he works the line. And he was just... so good. About two generations that don't know how really, really good that guy was as a stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd do things like, it's time to take a break, and he'd go backstage, and he wouldn't know the microphone's on backstage. He goes, I hate these fucking people. See that fat sack of shit in the front row? I mean, it was hilarious. Stuff that you wouldn't think Steve Martin would be doing. But he was just great to watch.
The fact you got to see him at the Boarding House...
I did actually
early Steve Martin.
Twice. I think he did an album from there, didn't he?
Yeah, one of his first. It was, I think it might have been his first. Not Wild and Crazy Guy. The one before that, I think. Let's Get Small.
And then, was that the one from the Universal Amphitheater?
No, Blues Brothers opened for? No, but I've seen that concert.
That's incredible.
That was unfucking-believable.
And you know, and a lot of people don't remember it, but there was really nothing hotter than that guy. I mean, at least in my demographic, you know, I was in, like, college and out of college and stuff when he was, you know, or actually when he started to hit, I guess I was in junior college, but he was just terrific.
Yeah. No, and like I said, I was reading his book, and he talks about the Boarding House and all those old shows. And
yeah.
He used to perform at the Ice House, too, in Pasadena.
They have pictures. I know. That would have been something, huh?
Oh, totally. Totally.
I love that guy.
Just amazing. Like, he's one of my heroes. He's one of the reasons I got into it.
You know, me too. I think I would... I'd definitely have to list him as an inspiration and maybe even a top five situation.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe not.
Who would your other four be?
Well, Johnny, of course. I think Groucho Marx. Richard Pryor. Bill Cosby and George Carlin and Woody Allen.
That's a hell of a five. That's
seven.
That's
a good group of people. Isn't it nice that I can just name them and feel good?
And did you get to meet any of them?
I'm trying to think right now.
You said you met Groucho Marx,
right?
Well,
that's exactly. I met Groucho Marx in 1975. I was down visiting. I was actually just in town, and a friend of mine from high school. And we're walking in front of the Nate and Al Delicatessen in Beverly Hills, and this guy's walking towards us in a beret with a nurse. And my friend Ken goes, you're about to experience something you will never forget as long as you live. And I look, and it's Groucho Marx. And Ken, my friend, just walks up to him and says, oh, you know, Groucho, nice to see you. This is my friend Dave. He wants to be a comedian. And Groucho shakes my hand and goes, well, I wish you all the luck in the world. And all I could say was, thank you, Groucho, thank you. I mean, that's about all I said.
That's about all anybody could say.
But it was incredible, and certainly one of my favorite people to meet. Bob Hope, I was so excited when I got to meet him.
You met Bob Hope?
A couple of times.
How did that happen?
at events and stuff, and I emceed the Jonas Salk Award when they gave it to him, and he was just great. I got to sit with him on at the Bob Hope Desert Classic, and it was one of his last ones, because you know Tom Dreesen.
Yeah.
He got me this great gig down there. He was performing and playing down there, but he got me this gig where I'm at the first tee, and all I got to do is announce people, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Bench, you know, stuff like that. So I'm sitting there, and then I sit for an hour and a half. I'm sitting with Bob Hope.
Jesus.
And I asked him, what's your favorite golf story? What's your favorite golf joke? And he goes, I'll tell you. And the joke basically is he was playing golf, and he had a caddy, and he had this really terrible round of golf. And he said to the caddy, he said, you got to be the worst caddy in the world. And the caddy said, no, that'd be too much of a fucking coincidence. Just to hear Bob Hope say fucking, by the way, was just, that's worth everything.
Absolutely.
But then he goes to me, he goes, you know, that's Foster Brooks' line, kid. He's dead. It's all yours. So I do it in my act now. I got Bob Hope's blessing, for crying out loud.
Wow. Yeah, that actually happened with me and Milton Berle.
Really?
Yeah, when I was telling David the story before we started recording about when I got to meet Milton Berle the day that I was showcasing at the for the Hollywood Improv when I first moved out here. So Milton, I'm sitting at the table, and I told him, you know, I have to leave soon. I got this spot. And he goes, well, what are you going to open with? And I go, well, I was thinking. He goes, no, you don't think, you do. Look, I'm going to give you a line. You use this, you can get the laugh. Go up on stage and say, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say it's nice to be here tonight, but it's not. You see, today I found out that my best friend ran off with my wife. God, I miss him.
I like it.
It's a sweet, cute line.
It is. Well, it's sweet, and then in my twisted mind, when you said my best friend ran off with my wife, I thought she ran off with the dog.
Yeah, right.
Ah.
I like that, though. That's great.
It could be. It's open for interpretation. I just said him.
I said him.
But I used that line that night.
That I miss him. Like, isn't that great? My balls.
Yeah.
that's a way to differentiate.
Yeah.
I miss him licking my balls. Yeah. What is that, Skippy's dog?
Basically.
Yes. So that's amazing. So Bob Hope.
Yeah. Oh, it was terrific.
And Groucho.
You know, I'm trying to think of the other guys I named. I don't think I met George Carlin. I actually didn't meet George Carlin. And that's it. And Cosby.
You met Cosby.
Cosby in Atlantic City. So, yes, there are a couple, but I'd love to. God, Woody Allen. I'd love to meet that guy. Johnny Carson, that would have been a thrill.
He's still around. You're going to meet him.
Johnny?
Kidding.
Excuse me. You got my hopes up there. I'm going, let's get to the band.
I got to meet Ed McMahon a few times.
Did you?
Yeah. I was years ago, Ed McMahon tried to kind of revamp Star Search with this thing called Ed McMahon's Next Big Star. And this was back in 2000, 2001. So long story short, I ended up getting on the finals, which was a taping in front of a live audience with Ed McMahon hosting it. And Ed was actually a very big fan of mine. And, nice. And yeah, really nice guy. And yeah, so I'm on the show, and I ended up winning the comedy competition. And I remember this really surreal moment with Ed McMahon shaking my hand saying, congratulations, Flip Schultz. It's like,
that's terrific.
That was very cool. Really sweet guy.
And it's wonderful that a second banana can be an icon, too.
Yeah, oh.
And he really was. I love that guy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and you throw Doc in, and that's a dream trio there, those three.
Trifecta of perfect.
You know, it was just a treat to watch those three in their prime.
Yeah, nobody really has a sidekick anymore. I guess Conan's the only one.
Well, yeah, Conan. And
Craig Ferguson has a skeleton.
Yeah. And what's that all about? I don't get that.
Well, his show is kind of like twisted anyway.
It is.
So it almost makes sense that he would have a robotic skeleton as a sidekick.
Yeah.
But
he's a strange man.
But as far as like a true straight man, like I think Conan's the only one that still has one.
Well, Andy Richter's terrific.
Yeah, oh, fantastic.
I mean, and those two guys have a wonderful chemistry, and Richter's just got a whip-smart sense of humor, and
I felt like it was smarter than to bring him back, because he was on for a while.
Right, I agree. It was a really smart move.
Because they and it almost it was almost like how Coke was back when it was like the new Coke.
Yes.
And then old Coke came back and you're like, ah, Coke Classic. That's the way it should be. That's the way. That's what they did. They Coke Classic'd Andy Richter.
So Andy Richter.
God,
I'm sorry. This microphone sucks, everybody. I got that shitty cord. I know. That's why I'm listening.
We're approaching Barstow.
Are we approaching Barstow?
Hey, that's why the traffic's getting bad. So many people want to go.
Yes, Barstow.
Well, you know, it's funny.
Fun never starts.
This is my Barstow line. I go, Vegas has this slogan, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I thought of a slogan for Barstow. It goes like this. What happens in Barstow is a fucking miracle because nothing happens in Barstow.
I like that.
It's an interchangeable. It's one of those interchangeable type jokes.
I did kind of a Barstow joke last night. I was talking about things happening in the news. I said a mysterious outbreak of dandruff in a small community near Barstow has local authorities scratching their heads. I can't turn it off, people.
You can't.
I don't have an off switch, okay?
Thank God for that, Mr. Gee. Are you... Do you... because this week you had that bit about the dogs...
Oh,
letting them out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, that was new. I read it as this just in. After several years and an intense investigation, police have identified a 38-year-old landscaper from Fort Lauderdale as the guy who let the dogs out.
And you know, it's ironic. I'm 38 from Lauderdale.
You're kidding me.
And
no.
He used to trim grass. Otherwise known as the Lady Parts.
Yeah, you had it up till there, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah. Does this door unlock?
Actually, Allison and all her wonderful positivity came in handy today. We had a little crisis before we started this podcast, everybody.
Oh, that's true.
And we had stopped for lunch back in Baker. And probably about 15 minutes out, David realizes he left his bag in the restaurant over there. So we're scrambling to try to turn around, and Allison is just saying, the bag's still there. I see it. I see it. I see it. And this is a very, not a high-class area of eateries, so some sketchy people there, but she's putting out that positive vibe, and we get there, and lo and behold...
The bag was right where I left it.
Right where you left it.
Yep, that's exactly as I said it. I can see it.
She is Cassandra, as you called her. She's a seer.
I'm a witch.
You are a witch.
You're Samantha. Oh, Sammy. Dating yourself again.
Wait, hold on. No.
Paul Lynde is Uncle Arthur.
Thank you.
In the original Bewitched.
You know who I always used to get him confused with, and now I'm going to date myself, but I only know this because my dad weaned me on Nick at Night, Alan Seuss.
Oh, yeah, Alan Seuss. And I believe Alan Seuss is still around.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
I hope he's not listening.
Well, I do have a wide
but,
variety
you know,
of...
he was just a part of this, and this is before you were born, but on a Monday night in 1968 at 8 p.m., there was nobody on the road. Everybody was watching, laughing. And he was a big part of that.
He was. Oh, I love laughing. Roland Martin.
He was huge, you know, with Artie Johnson.
Artie Johnson, Joanne Worley. Goldie Hawn.
Ruth Buzzy. It was an incredible cast. And then Dan and Dick, who were really great.
Terrific.
I always loved those guys.
But Alan Seuss always had that Paul Lynde quality about him. Just that kind of
effeminate
energy.
You know who else did? It was the actress Alice Ghostly. She was a lot like Paul Lynde, talking like that. You know, she had a kind of a female side of Paul Lynde, if there wasn't already one.
I was going to say.
This is what's crazy about driving back from Vegas, is that there are these small, dingy-looking places that are desperately trying to get you to stop at them, and then people actually are coming out with dissatisfied faces, yet people will still take a chance on a shack with a sign that says, please stop for food. I don't know. That was a non-sequitur.
Well, sometimes there's a need for crappy road food.
This is, though, a bit of Hunter Thompson's Fear and Loathing, only it's in actually reverse. We're actually going back from Las Vegas.
From L.A.
But it is. It's a road trip. You know, come on.
Totally. Totally.
I do, too.
Are you a Hunter Thomas fan?
Hunter Thompson was a guy who I really appreciated as a journalist. I love what he wrote in Rolling Stone, and I liked Fear and Loathing, but I didn't go nuts over it like a lot of people did. I thought it was pretty funny, though.
The article or the movie?
The book.
The book, I'm sorry. Did you ever see the movie with Johnny Depp?
I never did.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's really...
Well, Depp actually knew him.
Yeah.
They were close.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a great casting to put him in there.
Matter of fact, I heard a story that Hunter S. Thompson was the one who shaved Depp's hair when he started filming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I didn't know he was a hairstylist.
He is.
Among his many other talents.
You know, a movie I started watching, and I was on the road somewhere, and it was really late, and I couldn't finish it. I was too tired. But that documentary about Crumb, you know,
about who?
The comic book artist, something Crumb.
Yes, it's.
Paul Giamatti, isn't it?
No. Paul Giamatti was in American Splendor, where the Crumb character, where Crumb. Was a
Crumb was an artist in I believe in the Bay Area in the 60s, and he did like Keep on Truckin'.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
R. Crumb. And I saw that documentary. I loved it. What an eccentric guy that was.
Totally. Just really and very afraid of his own fame.
Yeah.
And big recluse.
And he was a terrific artist. He did Janis Joplin and Big Brother and the Holding Company's album cover. And it was, you know, it's like reading a comic strip, and it was really good. And, man, he was a terrific artist.
Really was. And, like I said, that movie was just fascinating. Unfortunately, I was too tired to finish watching it.
Well, the guy's he's just batshit crazy.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways. But
it seems a lot of the really, really creative, people are batshit crazy. Like
Springsteen's pretty damn sane. You know, I mean, I do think that I see what you mean in terms of eccentricity, you know?
Yeah. Well, not everybody, but you'll find that a lot of people, they're more batshit crazy people in this arena of profession.
Yeah.
Than in others.
Well, yes.
You know, because I think that there needs to be, for a lot of us, some kind of, like, I know personally for me, I do comedy, you know, not just because I love making people laugh, but there's a part of me that I'm trying to fill with the love of strangers.
Well, how about this past week you headlined, ladies and gentlemen, this man headlined in Las Vegas. That is something to say.
That was fun. Schultz. That was fun.
He did from Tuesday through Thursday.
And you know, I noticed it.
Pollock comes along, you lose your job, you're featuring suddenly.
Suddenly I'm featuring again.
There, you know, I'm not sure, but I think that in stand-up comedy, there just might be a pecking order. I'm going out on a limb here.
David.
But Pollock over you, come on.
I don't believe it. I think you might have some just delusions there, David. I think it's all still very fair. It's just a...
No, it was a great show.
No, it really was. And you know what?
And then Allison got up.
Yeah, actually, this is cool, too. Allison.
And that was just terrific.
With the help of her own friends and the showroom manager, huge shout-out to Carl, got Allison.
We love you. Portillo.
Not only got Allison on the show at the Improv, but set up spots for her all around town, which was very cool. How'd it feel to play Vegas?
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, as everybody knows, my mindset is so sinful as it is, and I wanted to take a crack at Sin City. It was an absolute honor, and thank you to Carl and to everybody in Vegas for the support.
She's jaded now, though.
Is
yeah, you know, have you noticed it? There's an arrogance about her, you know, it's sort of a...
There is no way she will ever be bitter and jaded. That's what worries me about her wanting to be a comic. Like, you still like it too much.
I don't think I'll ever not like it. I mean, how fun is it to be around people who want to make people laugh? I mean, for whatever reason you want to do it for, you're still wanting to create joy in other people. That's a commendable and wonderful job. That's a healthy, you're providing health to people, giving them something happy and positive to think. And with my mindset, that's just the absolute best kind of thing you can do.
And the pussy's not bad either.
Hey, there you go.
That's
Getting
what I'm...
back on
there
track.
You go. Bum, 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 bum. I was also going to say, too, what's funny is the... just mentioned that I was headlining for those 3 days over there, 3 days at the Improv. The very first comedy club I ever went to, David, was the Improv back when it was at the Riv.
Yeah.
And very first... I was 16 years old. It was in 1990.
And you got in?
I got in. Well, my parents... We were on vacation with my parents, and they... Because I wanted to be a comic since I was 8. So my parents said, we're going to take you to comedy club. And I remember the lineup. It was Deborah Swisher was hosting, Jeff Stilson was middling, and Bob Zaney was headlining.
Wow. I love Bob Zaney.
I do, too.
I don't know the other two, but Bob Zaney. I was a fan of Bob Zaney's before he was a friend of mine. He's one of those comedians. You know?
Oh, totally.
And I just think he's just incredibly
That's
funny.
Man who he reminds me very much of old school comedy. Just
oh, I love doing that. You know, I get that a lot. You know, there is kind of a hope thing I do, you know, where I just really like to enjoy the moment there.
Yeah, of course.
And maybe inflections and stuff, I don't know. But yeah, I love those guys.
Yeah, no, totally.
But and I was very proud of you. I think you did a great job, and both of you in Las Vegas. I thought it was a really good show to see. People who got to see it were very, very fortunate.
And as always, David, you're
right back at you. I'm sorry, I started to talk over Flip. Go ahead.
No, just, I was going to echo what Allison just said. It's always a pleasure to watch you work, man. It really is. I'm not just saying that.
Do you see this? This is my cup of give a shit, and it's empty. Okay.
Oh no, seriously, my first time watching you work, and you were fabulous.
Well,
absolutely fabulous. Hilarious. The crowd loved you. It was you had the crowd in the palm of your hands every time that you hit the stage. So
well,
it was fabulous.
I appreciate that. It's a room, you know, I opened that room in 1995 with Wendy Liebman and Ron Pearson and Bobby Tessel.
Four?
And I opened that room, and so it's been there. We've been there 18 years. That's incredible. It's wonderful. It used to be a bingo room, and they turned it into a comedy club. And I think a really good one. And when there's a lot of people in there, there's nothing like it.
No, not at all. You're right. It's a fantastic room. We were going to make this a short episode, folks, because we are on a long drive, and we don't want to be podcasting the whole time. So before we sign off, David, this is a little part of the show that we always do toward the end, a little part called The Skippy Green Show.
It's the Skippy Green Show.
David Gee, how are you?
I want that song played at my wedding.
Not only will it be played at your wedding, I will be there while you're consummating your wife. While I watch. All right, David, are you ready?
I am ready.
This is how this works. Answer the following question in 10 words exactly. Not 11, not 9, but 10 words, okay?
Okay.
And as I'm driving, I can't really count.
All right, well, much like your time in your hotel room, David, you're going to have to use your fingers for this. You ready?
Okay.
If you...
I'm sorry?
If you... Dramatic pause. Could fuck. Another dramatic pause. Any of the people you impersonate, who would it be and why?
This might be surprising, but it would be Lois Griffin.
Oh, Peter!
You know what? I'd fuck that cartoon red muff any day.
Absolutely. I love the beige pants.
That was awesome, David. thank you so much for being forcibly doing this podcast while you're in our car.
My pleasure. Can I leave you with a brief poem?
Please.
I wrote a brief poem about life's lessons learned, and I thought when I finished it, who better to render this than the great Jack Nicholson? And it's entitled The Road Mistaken. I shall be telling this with a sigh and with a nod to Robert Frost. Two roads diverged in a wood and I took the one less traveled by, and now I'm fucking lost.
I'm hitting the window instead of applauding because I'm holding the mic. That was fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being had, David. Do you have a website or Twitter?
I do. It's davidgeecomedy.com.
There you go. That's G-E-E?
G-E-E.
There you go.
davidgeecomedy.com. You know, my name is pronounced Gee, G-E-E, and I dropped the K for professional reasons.
I had the same problem with my cousin, Johnny Fook. Fook. And folks, of course, Allison, DirtyGuitarGirl.com. You can get her on Twitter at Allison Comedy. You know all my shit. I'm not going to plug it anymore except to say FlipIsFunny.com. Twitter, I got tour dates coming up. Go to the website. Check that out. We'll see you guys next week. Yay for the lap-sucking scumbag road podcast. Shitbag.
Lipstick. Son of a bitch.
The scum-lapping shitbag road podcast. There we go. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Woo!
What's for dinner? What's for dinner?
Well, that's a first
dinner?
For me.
Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds.